Chapter 2. Whoever would begin to be worried with letting lodgings that wasn't a lone woman with a living to get is a thing inconceivable to me, my dear. Excuse the familiarity, but it comes natural to me in my own little room when wishing to open my mind to those that I can trust, and I should be truly thankful if they were all mankind. But such is not so, for I've but a furnished bill in the window, and your watch on the mantelpiece, and farewell to it, if you turn your back for but a second, however gentlemanly the manners, nor is being of your own sex any safeguard, as I have reason, in the form of sugar tongs to know, for that lady and a fine woman she was, got me to run for a glass of water, on the plea of going to be confined. Which certainly turned out true, but it was in the station house. Number 81 Norfolk Street, Strand, situated midway between the city and St. James, and within 5 minutes' walk of the principal places of public amusement is my address. I have rented this house many years, as the parish rate books will testify, and I could wish my landlord was as alive to the fact as I am myself. But no, bless you, not a half a pound of paint to save his life, nor so much, my dear, as a tile upon the roof, though on your bended knees. My dear, you never have found number 81 Norfolk Street Strand advertised in Bradshaw's Railway Guide, and with the blessing of heaven you never will or shall so find it. Some there are who do not think it lowering themselves to make their names that cheap, and even going the lengths of a portrait of the house, not like it with a blot in every window, and a coach and four at the door, but what will suit Wozenham's lower down on the other side of the way, will not suit me, Miss Wozenham having her opinions and me having mine, though when it comes to systematic underbidding capable of being proved on oath in a court of justice and taking the form of, if Mrs. Lurper names 18 shillings a week, I name 15 and 6, it then comes to a settlement between yourself and your conscience, supposing for the sake of argument your name to be Wozenham, which I am well aware it is not, or my opinion of you would be greatly lowered, and as to airy bedrooms and a night porter in constant attendance the less said the better, the bedrooms being stuffy, and the porter stuff. It is 40 years ago since me and my poor Lurper got married at St. Clement Staines, where I now have a sitting in a very pleasant pew with genteel company and my own hassock, and being partial to evening service not too crowded. My poor Lurper was a handsome figure of a man, with a beaming eye and a voice as mellow as a musical instrument made of honey and steel, but he had ever been a free liver, being in the commercial travelling line and travelling, what he called a limicon road, a dry road. Emma, my dear, my poor Lurper says to me, where I have to lay the dust with one drink, or another all day long and half the night, and it wears me, Emma, and this led to his running through a good deal, and might have run through the turnpike too, when that dreadful horse, that never would stand still for a single instant, set off, but for its being night and the gate shut, and consequently took his wheel, my poor Lurper and the gig smashed to atoms, and never spoke afterwards. He was a handsome figure of a man, and a man with a jovial heart and a sweet temper. But if they had come up then, they never could have given you the mellowness of his voice, and indeed I consider photographs wanting in mellowness as a general rule and making you look like a new plowed field. My poor Lurper being behindhand with the world, and being buried at Hatfield Church in Hertfordshire, not that it was his native place, but that he had a liking for the Salisbury Arms, where we went upon our wedding day, and passed as happy a fortnight as ever happy was, I went round to the creditors, and I says, gentlemen, I am acquainted with the fact that I am not answerable for my late husband's debts, but I wish to pay them, for I am his lawful wife, and his good name is dear to me. I am going into the lodgings, gentlemen, as a business, and if I prosper, every farthing that my late husband owed shall be paid for the sake of the love I bore him, by this right hand. It took a long time to do, but it was done, and the silver cream jug which is between ourselves, and the bed and the mattress in my room upstairs, or it would have found Lex so sure as ever the furnished bill was up, being presented by the gentleman engraved to Mrs. Lurper. A mark of grateful respect for her honorable conduct gave me a turn which was too much for my feelings. Till Mr. Bentley, which at that time had the parlors, and loved his jokes as cheer up Mrs. Lurper, you should feel as if it was only your christening and they were your godfathers and godmothers which did promise for you. And it brought me round, and I don't mind confessing to you, my dear, that I then put a sandwich and a drop of sherry in a little basket, and went down to Hatfield Churchyard outside the coach, and kissed my hand, and laid it with a kind of proud and swelling love on my husband's grave, though, bless you, it had taken me so long to clear his name, that my wedding ring was worn quite fine and smooth when I laid it on the green, green waving grass. I am an old woman now, and my good looks are gone, but that's me, my dear, over the plate warmer, and considered like in the times, when you used to pay 2 guineas on ivory, and took your chance pretty much how you came out, which made you very careful how you left it about afterwards, because people were turned so red and uncomfortable by mostly guessing it was somebody else quite different. And there was once a certain person that had put his money in a hop business, that came in one morning to pay his rent and his respects, being the second floor, that would have taken it down from its hook and put it in his breast pocket, you understand, my dear, for the L. He says of the original only there was no mellowness in his voice, and I wouldn't let him, but his opinion of it, you may gather from his saying to it, "Speak to me, Emma," which was far from a rational observation, no doubt, but still a tribute to its being a likeness, and I think myself it was like me when I was young, and wore that sort of stays. But it was about the lodgings that I was intending to hold forth, and certainly I ought to know something of the business, having been in it so long, for it was early in the second year of my married life that I lost my poor Lurper, and I set up at Islington directly afterwards, and afterwards came here, being 2 houses and 8 and 30 years, and some losses and a deal of experience. Girls are your first trial after fixtures, and they try you even worse than what I call the wandering Christians, though why they should roam the earth looking for bills, and then coming in and viewing the apartments and stickling about terms, and never at all wanting them, or dreaming of taking them being already provided, is a mystery I should be thankful to have explained, if by any miracle it could be. It's wonderful they live so long, and thrive so on it, but I suppose the exercise makes it healthy, knocking so much and going from house to house, and up and down stairs all day, and then they're pretending to be so particular, and punctual is a most astonishing thing, looking at their watches and saying, "Could you give me the refusal of the rooms till 11:20 the day after tomorrow in the forenoon?" And supposing it to be considered essential by my friend from the country, could there be a small iron bedstead put in the little room upon the stairs? Why, when I was new to it, my dear, I used to consider, before I promised, and to make my mind anxious with calculations, and to get quite wearied out with disappointments. But now I says, certainly, by all means, well knowing it's a wandering Christian, and I shall hear no more about it. Indeed, by this time I know most of the wandering Christians by sight as well as they know me, it being the habit of each individual revolving round London in that capacity to come back about twice a year, and it's very remarkable that it runs in families and the children grow up to it. But even were it otherwise, I should no sooner hear of the friend from the country, which is a certain sign, than I should nod and say to myself, "You're a wandering Christian," though whether they are, as I have heard, persons of small property with a taste for regular employment and frequent change of scene, I cannot undertake to tell you. Girls, as I was beginning to remark, are one of your first and your lasting troubles, being like your teeth which begin with convulsions, and never cease tormenting you from the time you cut them till they cut you, and then you don't want to part with them, which seems hard, But we must all succumb or buy artificial, and even where you get a will 9 times out of 10 you'll get a dirty face with it, and naturally lodgers do not like good society to be shown in with a smear of black across the nose or a smudgy eyebrow. Where they pick the black up is a mystery I cannot solve, as in the case of the willingest girl that ever came into a house half-starved poor thing, a girl so willing that I called her willing Sophie down upon her knees scrubbing early and late, and ever cheerful, but always smiling with a black face. And I says to Sophie, "Now Sophie my good girl, have a regular day for your stoves, and keep the width of the airy between yourself and the blacking, and do not brush your hair with the bottoms of the saucepans, and do not meddle with the snuffs of the candles, and it stands to reason, that it can no longer be yet there it was, and always on her nose, which turning up, and being broad at the end seemed to boast of it, and caused warning from a steady gentleman, and excellent lodger with breakfast by the week, but a little irritable, and use of a sitting room when required, his words being, 'Mrs. Lirriper, I have arrived at the point of admitting that the black is a man and a brother, but only in a natural form, and when it can't be got off.' Well, consequently I put poor Sophie on to other work, and forbid her answering the door, or answering a bell on any account, but she was so unfortunately willing, that nothing would stop her flying up the kitchen stairs, whenever a bell was heard to tingle. I put it to her, 'Oh Sophie, Sophie, for goodness's sake, where does it come from?' To which that poor unlucky willing mortal, bursting out crying, to see me so vexed, replied, 'I took a deal of black into me, ma'am, when I was a small child being much neglected, and I think it must be, that it works out, so it continuing to work out of that poor thing, and not having another fault to find with her.' I says, 'Sophie, what do you seriously think of my helping you away to New South Wales, where it might not be noticed?' Nor did I ever repent the money which was well spent, for she married the ship's cook on the voyage, himself a muleteer, and did well and lived happy, and so far as ever I heard it was not noticed in a new state of society to her dying day. In what way Miss Wozenham, lower down on the other side of the way, reconciled it to her feelings as a lady which she is not, to entice Mary Ann Perkins up from my service, is best known to herself, I do not know, and I do not wish to know how opinions are formed at Wozenham's on any point. But Mary Ann Perkinsop, although I behaved handsomely to her, and she behaved unhandsomely to me, was worth her weight in gold as overawing lodgers without driving them away, for lodgers would be far more sparing of their bells with Mary Ann than I ever knew them to be with maid or mistress, which is a great triumph, especially when accompanied with a cast in the eye and a bag of bones. But it was the steadiness of her way with them through her father's having failed in pork. It was Mary Ann's looking, so respectable in her person, and being so strict in her spirits, that conquered the tea and sugarest gentleman, for he weighed them both in a pair of scales every morning, that I have ever had to deal with, and no lamb grew meeker. Still it afterwards came round to me that Miss Wozenham happening to pass, and seeing Mary Ann take in the milk of a milkman, that made free in a rosy-faced way, I think no worse of him, with every girl in the street, but was quite frozen up like the statue at Charing Cross by her, saw Mary Ann's value in the lodging business, and went as high as £1 per quarter more. Consequently Mary Ann, with not a word betwixt us, says, 'If you will provide yourself, Mrs. Lirriper, in a month from this day, I have already done the same,' which hurt me, and I said so, and she then hurt me more by insinuating that her father having failed in pork had laid her open to it. My dear, I do assure you it's a harassing thing to know what kind of girls to give the preference to, for if they are lively they get bellied off their legs, and if they are sluggish you suffer from it yourself in complaints, and if they are sparkling eyed they get made love to, and if they are smart in their persons they try on your lodgers' bonnets, and if they are musical I defy you to keep them away from bands and organs, and allowing for any difference you like in their heads will be always out of window just the same. And then what the gentlemen like in girls the ladies don't, which is fruitful hot water for all parties. And then there's temper, though such a temper as Caroline Maxey's I hope not often. A good-looking black-eyed girl was Caroline, and a comely maid girl to your cost, when she did break out and laid about her, as took place first and last through a new married couple come to see London in the first floor and the lady very high, and it was supposed not liking the good looks of Caroline having none of her own to spare, but anyhow she did try Caroline, though that was no excuse. So one afternoon Caroline comes down into the kitchen flushed and flashing, and she says to me, Mrs. Lirriper, that woman in the first has aggravated me past bearing. I says, Caroline, keep your temper. Caroline says with a curdling laugh, keep my temper? You're right, Mrs. Lirriper, so I will. Capital dear. Bursts out Caroline, you might have struck me into the center of the earth with a feather when she said it. I'll give her a touch of the temper that I keep. Caroline downs with her hair, my dear, screeches and rushes upstairs, I following as fast as my trembling legs could bear me, but before I got into the room the dinner cloth and pink and white service all dragged off upon the floor with a crash, and the new married couple on their backs in the fire grate, him with the shovel and tongs, and a dish of cucumber across him, and a mercy it was summer time. Caroline, I says, be calm, but she catches off my cap, and tears it in her teeth as she passes me, then pounces on the new married lady, makes her a bundle of ribbons, takes her by the two ears, and knocks the back of her head upon the carpet, murder screaming all the time, policemen running down the street and Wozenham's windows, judge of my feelings, when I came to know it, thrown up, and Miss Wozenham calling out from the balcony with crocodile's tears, it's Mrs. Lirriper been overcharging somebody to madness, she'll be murdered I always thought, so policemen save her. My dear, four of them, and Caroline behind the chiffonier attacking with the poker, and when disarmed prize fighting with her double fists, and down and up and up and down and dreadful. But I couldn't bear to see the poor young creature roughly handled and her hair torn, when they got the better of her, and I says, gentlemen policemen, pray remember, that her sex is the sex of your mothers and sisters and your sweethearts, and God bless them and you. And there she was sitting down on the ground handcuffed, taking breath against the skirting board and them cool with their coats in strips, and all she says was, Mrs. Lirriper, I'm sorry as ever I touched you, for you're a kind motherly old thing, and it made me think that I had often wished I had been a mother indeed, and how would my heart have felt if I had been the mother of that girl. Well, you know, it turned out at the police office that she had done it before, and she had her clothes away, and was sent to prison, and when she was to come out I trotted off to the gate in the evening with just a morsel of jelly in that little basket of mine, to give her a mite of strength, to face the world again, and there I met with a very decent mother waiting for her son through bad company, and a stubborn one he was with his half boots not laced. So out came Caroline, and I says, Caroline, come along with me, and sit down under the wall where it's retired, and eat a little trifle that I have brought with me to do you good. And she throws her arms round my neck, and says sobbing, oh, why were you never a mother, when there are such mothers as there are, she says, and in half a minute more she begins to laugh and says, did I really tear your cap to shreds? And when I told her you certainly did, so Caroline she laughed again, and said while she patted my face, then, why do you wear such queer old caps, you dear old thing, if you hadn't worn such queer old caps I don't think I should have done it even then. Fancy the girl. Nothing could get out of her, what she was going to do except though she would do well enough, and we parted she being very thankful and kissing my hands, and I never more saw or heard of that girl, except that I shall always believe, that a very genteel cap which was brought anonymous to me one Saturday night in an oilskin basket by a most impertinent young sparrow of a monkey whistling with dirty shoes on the clean steps and playing the harp on the airy railings with a hoop stick came from Caroline. What do you lay yourself open to, my dear, in the way of being the object of uncharitable suspicions? When you go into the lodging business, I have not the words to tell you, but never was I so dishonorable as to have two keys, nor would I willingly think it even of Miss Wozenham lower down on the other side of the way, sincerely hoping that it may not be, though doubtless at the same time money cannot come from nowhere, and it is not reason to suppose that Bradshaw's put it in for love, be it bloody as it may. It is a hardship hurting to the feelings that lodgers open their minds so wide to the idea that you are trying to get the better of them, and shut their minds so close to the idea that they are trying to get the better of you. But as Major Jackman says to me, I know the ways of this circular world. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.